morning, Dan.
Oh, anarchy's gonna rain today.
Mr. Leonard, thank you for joining us.
Thanks to be wanted. Thank you.
Okay, the city council will come to order. This is Wednesday, February 24th, 2010. Carla, would you please call the roll?
Fritz.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Adams.
We'll start with council communications. Carla, would you please read number 251?
Request of Randy Toole to address council regarding activism and social justice.
Mr. Toole, welcome. If you could take a seat, you have just give us your first and last name, and you have 3 minutes, sir.
All right, thank you. My name is Randy Toole. I'm here to discuss basically what the city's doing about the homeless problem that's here going on in the city, and also about the rampage in Old Town on the drugs. You know, about our living standards down there. I've been homeless. There's a new breed of homeless people that are coming into the market, well, the homeless market, but it's people that have been, are suffering from the economy. There's educated people that are out there now that have ended up on, in this predicament because of our economy and have ended up having to go into subsidized housing because of the job market and everything else. I personally live in a subsidized housing. I live right down in the middle of it, right above Sisters of the Road, where, you know, this is now our bus mall, where the city has invested, TriMet's invested, the federal government's invested money into bringing a mass transit through here. This is the first thing that people see when they come to our city, you know, from the bus depot, from the train station, is they're going to walk or take the MAX down the street and see what's going on here. And this isn't a way our city should be portrayed as a relief station for the homeless, for drug dealing, you know, for just all-out crime. I have to live in this thing. There's property people in there. I live under a CCC building. The stuff has filtered into my building to where it's bringing my standard of living down. I don't like... You know, I'm not there because of alcoholism or drug addiction. I'm there because of the economy. I can't find a job. I'm stuck here. I'm trying to do something about it. But yet this stuff keeps filtering in. I brought it to property management. I want people to start taking accountability, you know, for their position on, you know, you're providing a housing here. You should be accountable for, you know, what you're providing. You know, there's... You're allowing it to happen. There should be a line drawn here, and I'm asking the city to really step in and, you know, make these businesses accountable for it. They're accepting federal money. You know, there's federal grants out there that is accepting this. They're accepting federal. They should be held to a standard on, you know, what you can, you know, do. You know, if you're going to be accepting that money, you got to police your own property. You got to police the action that's happening here. You can't allow this stuff to happen no more. And just, you know, basically, I'm asking the city to step in on this, you know, to investigate some of this stuff. And it looks like my time's about up.
Mr. Toole, thank you very much for your
comments. All right, thank you.
Appreciate it. Carla, would you please read Council Communications number 252?
Request of John Blair to address council regarding activism and social justice. He is not able to make it today.
Okay. Would you please read council communication number 253?
Request of Thomas Patrick Allen to address council regarding activism and social justice. He, too, is not able to make it.
Okay. Would you please read council communications number 254?
Request of Lou Church to address council regarding activism and social justice.
Church, welcome.
You can call me Lou, Sam.
I'm Lou with PSU Progressive Student Union, Transit Riders Union, Tenant Rights Project. In 2009, many social justice activists have found on city council Amanda and Randy to be helpful at times.
Dan Saltzman has been quiet.
Nick Fish continues to stonewall, and many continue to look for leadership from the Office of the Mayor. In terms of Tenant Rights Project versus Central City Unconcerned, which Randy came and talked about Central City's mismanagement, stopping TriMet's continuing neoliberal austerity assaults on transit riders through fare hikes and service cuts, and putting a stop to attacks on workers, the poor, and communities of color. On housing, Nick Fish, Ed Blackburn, Dean Giswold, with Central City and for Central City, continue to attempt to paper over mismanagement by the so-called nonprofit slumlord, Central City Unconcerned. These three slumlord apologists continue to refuse to meet with activist tenants, read persistent pest control problems, tenants being banned from speaking at or attending Central City board meetings, and secret board minutes, which is illegal for nonprofits. On TriMet, TriMet ignored 1,400 transit riders who petitioned to save Fairless Square. In 2010, TriMet proposes another fare increase and cuts to MAX service and 60 bus routes. This is unacceptable. On alternatives, there are alternatives for City Council. Many social justice activists support Mary Vollm over Dan Saltzman, and Transit Riders Union organizer Jason Barber, B-A-R-B-O-U-R, over Nick Fish. For more details about alternatives, see www.electjasonbarber.com, www.maryvollmforportland.com, and www.trimetriders.org. On solutions, tenant rights, public transit, and civil rights are important to a city that works. Is Portland the city that works for yuppies, or a city that belongs to all of us? Many Portland organizers believe Jesse Jackson was correct and accurate last week in characterizing the killing of an unarmed black man, Aaron Campbell, and execution by Portland police. In addition to the Federal Justice Department investigation, calls have been made to replace Rosie Sizer as police chief, to reassign and take away the police bureau from Dan Saltzman. We agree. Tenant Rights Project also again calls for the Housing Bureau to be reassigned from Nick Fish to Amanda Fritz. Marginalized communities like tenants, transit riders, and communities of color want to see elected bodies that look more like us, and to be frank, less like the Portland Business Alliance. In terms of city-funded slumlords, Portland Police Bureau budgets, and transit agencies that dismantle and dismember public transit, these are our taxpayer dollars. This is our city.
Thank you, Mr. Church. It's Nick, Lou, but we won't get technical. Carla, we have two time certains. I'm going to just preview for anyone who's here that the 10:15 time certain, which we'll call in a little bit, is going to be rescheduled to March 3. So if you're here for the 10:15 time certain, so-called Dirty Duck block application, we'll be taking that up on March 3, but we'll be formally setting that over a little later in our agenda. Carla, would you please read time certain council number 255?
Free Greek program update.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, President Fish. One of the things that, you can go ahead and come on up to the table. One of the things that struck us a couple of years ago was the fact that the city, which goes through many, many computers, oftentimes has to pay Gateway, I believe, or Dell or Gateway. We'd have to pay them an extra amount to dispose of these computers when they had run their useful life or when there was some new software program that certainly replaced the old ones. And we thought that was kind of a strange thing to do. I mean, these are good computers by almost any other standard. They didn't meet maybe the city standards at the time, but they still had a lot of utility for other people. So in 2008, we brought forward, council approved, and the city subsequently entered into an agreement to donate surplus city equipment, computers, to Free Geek, which is a local nonprofit that donates equipment in exchange for community service. Whatever can't be refurbished is then responsibly recycled. Since starting the program, almost 1,500 computers have gone to Free Geek and out to community organizations. The city has seen several benefits, including, as I said, we're no longer paying a Gateway or a Dell $30 per computer to take them off our hands, but we're also saving the city money in storage space. But the real benefit is that people in our community who have limited access to computers are able to use these machines and to learn refurbishing skills along the way And these machines, as will be explained, often go to worthy nonprofit organizations, which we have Albertina Kerr here today as one of those worthy nonprofit organizations. So today, to tell us more is Free Geek Director Dave Haskins, Don Rossington from the Youth Employment Institute, and Craig Rush from Albertina Kerr Center. So, Dave, are you going to start?
Sure, I can start. Okay. I'm Dave Haskins from Free Geek. Thanks for having me. I have a little slideshow here. So I'm here to let you know what actually happens to these computers once they come to Free Geek. When we get them, we bring them in, and our volunteers take them. Volunteers in our build program who are trying to learn about computers, they open them up, look them over, make sure that there isn't anything terribly wrong with them, or trying to make sure that they are new enough that they are still of good can be made of good use. The ones that can't be used go to our recycling area where they get pulled apart, and the ones that can be used go into our build classroom where our build volunteers put in wiped hard drives into them, install an operating system, they test them, and then they retest them to make sure that they are good systems in good working order so they can be given back out into reuse to those who need them. The main way these computers go out from the city is through our hardware grants program. And in our hardware grants program, any school or not-for-profit can request through a web form on our website, computer technology. And when we get these requests, we try to give these organizations everything that we can, because it is our belief at Free Geek that organizations that do good shouldn't be spending money on computer technology. They should be getting that computer technology from us, and with the money that they save, they should use to further their programs and their missions. Since we have received these computers from the city, it's really amazing the increase in both quality and quantity of systems that we're able to now provide. It's been really, really phenomenal. I just want to touch on another program we are just starting because of the computers we're getting in from the city. It is called Plug into Portland. It's a new program. We just piloted it last summer. This program, any student in the Portland school system, K through 12, that can bring to us proof of volunteering 24 hours anywhere in their community will get from us a free computer, a free class on how to use it, and a year free of tech support. Our pilot program was a really big success. These kids were really excited about both volunteering and getting their computers. We had whole families going out together volunteering and coming in and getting these systems. And we're looking to greatly expand this program this coming summer. And I'm also going to go over just a few numbers. Since we started this program, desktops and laptop systems that we've received from the city, 1,500. Systems from the city that Free Geek volunteers have refurbished. We have so far refurbished in our build program, which runs twice daily. We have two classes a day, 5 days a week, anywhere between 6 and 12 volunteers at a time. So there are a lot of volunteers getting a lot of hands-on experience and really excited about fixing these computers up. They have successfully refurbished 1,050 so far. Systems from Free Geek, systems from the city that Free Geek volunteers have recycled. 350, unfortunately not every system can make it. Sometimes they are just too broken or too old to be saved by our volunteers, and there's no need to worry. These systems, when they go to our recycling area, they get pulled apart and recycled to the highest green standards possible. Free Geek is a Oregon eCycles certified recycler. We meet their stringent standards. We are the only not-for-profit in the state right now that is a certified recycler under Oregon eCycles. And we are also a BAN-qualified recycler. So you can be sure that when we recycle these computers, we do the right thing with them. So far, 950 systems have found new homes in over 100 different schools and not-for-profits organizations within the city. So these computers that were just going back to Dell and we're just going back to Gateway, so far 950 of them have found new homes and they're being reused right here in our community. And today we have with us two people from nonprofits that have received computers from Free Geek, Don from Youth Employment Institute and Craig from Albertina Care. turn it over to you guys.
Hi, thank you for the invitation. My name is Donald Rossington. I'm a lead educator at the Youth Employment Institute. We're a nonprofit alternative school that provides GED preparation and workforce readiness training for at-risk youth and teen parents aged 16 to 21. The computers that was provided by the City of Portland that we received through FreeGeek has helped our program tremendously in many ways for staff and for students. The equipment that we had previously, a lot of it was 10-plus years old, so it was just very inefficient for us. We couldn't open email. I mean, it was very frustrating. And trying to get the kids to be motivated to come to school when our equipment was, you know, not up to par was very difficult. But since we received these new grants, the staff morale has gone up. We've been able to be more productive. We've updated our computer labs for the students, helped them get resumes completed and cover letters, and teach them how to use technology and the internet. So it's helped our organization tremendously, and we really appreciate the generosity of the city and the FreeGeek program. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Craig Rush with Albertina Kerr Centers. We've been working with FreeGeek almost since the inception of the grants program, I believe, since about 2004-2005. Over that time, at the beginning, we used to see donations in the range of, you know, you can come down and pick up four or five or something like that. For our agency, that was a little difficult because we're an agency of 800 people spread out over 55 locations. And our needs tend to be more in the, you know, we need 20 or 30 computers to support us so we can get them out and keep everybody working. We saw a dramatic difference starting when the program, we didn't even know the program was going on with the city, but all of a sudden we found that, hey, you can come pick up 30 today, or you can come get 45 next week. And as we picked up the computers, not only did we find that there were so many more available, we started seeing that, hey, these are quite good computers, you know, something that our staff wasn't really used to using. And we've seen that the quantity and the quality continue. As a matter of fact, I think just yesterday we picked up another 30. I'd estimate since the beginning of the program, Kerr has been able to not spend between $100,000 and $150,000 on this hardware. And that's real money to us. It's money that goes directly back to our programs instead of spending it on the computers. So it's really been a real boon for us.
Thank you. By the way, you have a famous sibling. Would you care to just remind us who your sister is and what honor she received recently?
Yeah, it's actually Danny Swope is my sister-in-law. She started a nonprofit organization called the Children's Book Bank. Mm. She works very closely with Hands On Portland and just received an award from Hands On Portland for their innovative use of volunteers in the community. I think they used something like about 800 or so volunteers in their first year of operation. And it's a great program. They give out books to 3 to 5 year olds through primarily the Head Start program, although they're branching out now and providing those. So it's actually books kids have in the homes as opposed to just being able to read them when they're at school or somewhere else.
So. Yes, I was at the award banquet where she received that award, and that program was very outstanding.
Yeah, we're very proud of her.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Anything further?
Any questions? So the program continues. 1,500 is what you've received to date. There's no problems with the arrangements with the city in terms of all the procedures are worked out.
No, everything
like the disk clean and
going
like
very smoothly. Yeah, you guys now wipe the disk once at on site, and then when we get them, we take them and we re-wipe them. So there's double security that all data is completely removed from these hard drives.
Right. And I think you know, one of the questions I wanted to ask is, I think I've gone out a lot and talked to groups and organizations and schools, visited schools, and I'm often telling them about the program. So I think, you know, we need to get the word out to more organizations because when they find out about it, they're like thrilled. So I don't know, do you have any kind of publicity on this on your website or?
We have links on our website to our grants program, and we're always trying to get the word out more, but any help we can get would be greatly appreciated.
And the new program, Plug In Portland?
Plug Into Portland.
Yeah, so 24 hours of volunteer service anywhere?
Anywhere.
Gets you a computer
if you're training a student K through 12 in the city of Portland, and we'll be reinitiating this program this summer. Okay. We try and focus on doing this program over summer break.
And by the way, the Children's Book Bank is also a recipient of computers from PD as well, not coincidentally.
Well, thank you all, gentlemen, and thank you, Albertina Kerr and Youth Employment Institute for the great work that you do and Free Geek. This is a true innovation and a good way for the city to be using computers rather than, as I said, selling them back to the vendor. This is a much more worthwhile application to get those computers out into the community. So thanks.
Thank you very much.
I also want to acknowledge Albertina Kerr's partnership with the city. They run the bicycle kiosk next adjacent to the McCall building, and this will be their second year, and we're delighted that they're part of the team.
Thank you. I call that the Rose Building now, Commissioner Fish.
The Rose Building. Thank you very much, Commissioner Saltzman, for the presentation. Thank you, guests.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I want to just, again, alert people in the audience that we will not be taking up the 10:15 time certain, and we will shortly be setting that over. Because we only have three members of the council present today, we will not be taking up any consent agenda items, so we will now move to the regular agenda. Carla, would you please read council item number 257?
Authorize an intergovernmental grant agreement with TriMet for city financial contributions to fund the final design and construction of the South Corridor Phase 2 Portland-Milwaukee Light Rail Project.
This is a second reading. Will you please call the roll?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye. Could you please read council item 258?
Authorize city to participate as intervener in petitioning for review of Federal Communications Commission's decision to preempt state and local regulations for cell tower siting.
Mary Beth Henry from the Cable Office is here, and I'd also want to acknowledge that Commissioner Amanda Fritz, who has played a leadership role on this issue, is visiting family abroad, so she could not join us. Mary Beth, welcome.
Thank you, Commissioners. Good morning. I'm Mary Beth Henry with the Cable Office, and with me is Ben Walters of the City Attorney's Office, who's available to answer all your tough questions. We ask that you support the resolution before you, which will authorize the City Attorney's Office to participate in challenging a ruling by the Federal Communications Commission that preempts state and local regulation for cell tower siting. The FCC's ruling imposes a mandatory shot clock to review wireless facilities. The shot clock is a capricious imposition by the FCC on the grounds that deployment of wireless networks across the nation needs to be sped up. The FCC's arbitrarily set shot clock is significantly shorter than Oregon's long-standing 120-day window for processing land use applications. Without a wireless applicant's voluntary extension of the FCC shot clock, city staff will be forced to process all land use reviews associated with wireless proposals within a hurry-up time frame, which will include a much shorter notification and public comment period. These abbreviated time frames imposed by the FCC directly conflict with the public involvement process built into Oregon's land use reviews. If the city fails to render a final decision within the truncated timeline of the FCC shot clock, the FCC's order allows a wireless applicant to proceed directly with a federal lawsuit against the city. The net result of this rulemaking is not only unfunded work for limited staff in development services, but also increased risk of legal costs for lawsuits based on time frames that are not consistent with Oregon law and the city's zoning code. This is an unacceptable erosion of local authority. I think it's important for the council to understand that this is one piece of a larger strategy on the part of communications companies to preempt local authority and control. In addition to this effort to preempt local zoning for cell phone towers, the FCC, at the behest of these same companies, is apparently poised to preempt franchise fees in the upcoming national broadband plan. The FCC is due to file this plan with Congress on March 17th. As you know, franchise fees represent a significant portion of the city's general fund. In lobbying the FCC on the broadband plan, the industry is seeking to limit the franchise fees to the cost of managing the right-of-way, as opposed to paying fair and reasonable rent for the use of the right-of-way. The negative financial impact to the city would be significant, especially in these tight budget times. I'd like to end by thanking Catherine Beaumont and Ben Walters of the City Attorney's Office and Sylvia Kate of Development Services, who continue to defend the city and the citizens' interest in the FCC's assault on local authority. We're available to answer questions. Thank you.
Go ahead, Dan.
So the FCC ordered the truncated timeline for cell tower siting.
Yes.
But the franchise fee has to be an act of, any attempt to cap the franchise fee has to be congressionally approved by Congress? Or does that an FCC rulemaking also?
These are two separate proceedings. The second one is a report to Congress, and then there would be follow-up action. We're not sure how the broadband plan will encapsulate the limitation. Either it could be a recommendation to Congress that Congress take action, or it could be the initiation of a rulemaking at the federal agency. All we know at this point in time is that in discussions with the commission staff who are working on the broadband plan, local government officials have been advised that this is a part of what they're considering and are contemplating moving forward with. And so Mary Beth just wanted to give you a heads up that that's also proceeding at this time.
So that I understand, is the issue solely one of expediting the application process, or does it include preempting what our criteria is for the placement of a cell phone tower in any given place?
The CTIA petition, which is what triggered this shot clock determination, only affects the timing of the processing of the applications. But to the extent that they come in and then have to be given a different priority than what they ordinarily would receive because of the 120-day application, it does throw things into a little bit of a topsy-turvy for staff over at the Planning Bureau. So that's part of the problem.
For an example, if the council were to, and this is something since I've been here that I've asked about and talked about in the forums we've had relative to appeals for the placement of towers, if the council were to designate specific areas within the city, that is locations, like let's just say on the corner of McLaughlin and Holgate, we'll allow a cell phone tower there. We'll allow a cell phone tower on Southeast 39th and Reed, just for an example. If we were to actually map as a city where we will allow them, and then by definition, no other locations were allowed, does that run into some federal interference?
Responding to that hypothetical, because I'm not aware that the council is contemplating anything along those lines
at least one fifth of the council is.
So noted. The CTIA order, the shot clock order, does not address that particular question. There are other aspects of federal law relating to restrictions upon the ability of cities in terms of the impact on the operation and the ability to offer telecommunication services. And we'd need to work with the council. If that was to come forward, we would need to work with the council in making sure that however we were proceeding, it was consistent with federal law.
I'm asking more broadly because this issue is before us. If we were to have a set of, not even a set of criteria, but pre-designated locations that we would allow cell phone towers, one of the issues that's always rubbed me wrong, and I don't know that I've ever voted to uphold an appeal for the placement of a cell phone tower. And typically it's because they don't follow our own rules that says they have to make a good faith effort to co-locate their cell phone antennas on an existing cell phone tower. I've never found that companies make a good faith effort to do that. But let's just say that we say, as a city, we have designated those areas within which, actually specific areas, we will allow a cell phone tower to be constructed. Does that by itself violate any of those other rules that you know of? I mean, is there some requirement that we actually allow them in residential neighborhoods?
To the extent that the regulation could have the legal impact of interfering with the ability of the provider to provide services, there would be a legal question presented. There's a federal statute that prohibits local governments from adopting regulations, and that was part of what we went through in the years of litigation with right. Quest, with their challenge to our regulations. And we did get a relatively recently, 2008, an improvement in the legal situation at the Ninth Circuit level in terms of the Ninth Circuit's interpretation of that statute. But that doesn't mean that the path is clear to prohibit outright the offering of services.
But let's.
So it would have to, the evaluation would have to occur on a case-by-case basis. And to the extent that if the company came in and was able to demonstrate that they needed to be at a particular site in order to offer services and no other site would suffice, then we would be in a legal position of not having the strongest case.
But I guess what I'm saying is technology coverage or cell phone coverage technology is not a mystery. I mean, we understand what it takes to have adequate coverage by company A, B, C, or D. And if in this placement, and this is not just something I'm thinking about here, and I had this office for a while, and it was something I thought about at the time. But if we were determined as a city, we know from our own research that if cell phone placements, cell phone tower placements occur at these very specific locations, any company can provide coverage. It just needs to be at this predetermined location. And it can be a city-owned piece of property, or it can be any one of a number of privately or publicly held pieces of property, but we determine that's where it has to be, and we can demonstrate that that provides adequate coverage for whatever cell phone company wants to install a tower. Is that defensible?
Well, if I can jump in here, because we Commissioner Leonard, we had a very lengthy and delicate conversation about this last year because of the opportunity to be sued on each of these issues. And there's, to my knowledge, there's a bunch of preemptions and some federal law here that goes against us. We know, for example, we've been preempted from looking at health impacts. That's right. Why Mayor Katz used to abstain on those applications, because she thought that was fundamentally wrong. The council last year took action to authorize a challenge to that preemption because the council believes that the health impacts should be assessed. The question of siting, and you raise an excellent point about our ability to determine whether there are coverage issues, but my recollection from the discussion we had last year when the council moved to a system of encouraging co-location, encouraging placement on arterials, was that the legal advice we got was because of the federal statute and the interpretation, the advantage was to the wireless companies to make the judgment about coverage. and that if we had unlimited resources, we could challenge that on a case-by-case basis. The problem here is that this preemption that is now before us puts the shot clock on us to such an extent that even if we had another 100 people in the cable franchise team looking at this and doing scientific studies and advocating, we're now under a time clock that makes it virtually impossible for us to do that.
But I have sat on appeals here where we have denied cell phone towers citing the criteria that has been told to us was a legal criteria, including good faith efforts to co-locate on a site. And we have not been overturned on those decisions. So
Commissioners, if I may, there are two different programs that we're talking about here. The resolution before you today is cell tower siting, which is really governed under our land use process, and the lead is Development Services and the Planning Bureau. What Commissioner Fish is referring to is the program that is managed through our office, which is not placing cell towers in the right-of-way, but rather placing cell attachments on existing utility poles. So there are two different wireless programs.
Understood. Okay. What I'm saying is, in reaction to this, this theoretically, if a cell phone company came in and said, we're making an application to put a tower up on this particular site, we reject it instantly and go, no, we have a pre-approved set of sites that we have already determined provide adequate coverage. If you place them at that site, you haven't placed it at that site. So, yeah, we can meet the timeline that now the FCC says, no, you can't have it. Or they come in conversely and say, we want to put a cell phone tower site on this site that you've previously identified as being okay on McLaughlin and Holgate. Yes, you can have it. That's a pre-approved site.
And I guess, Commissioner Leonard, for purposes of discussion, if that is something that you're interested in pursuing, then our office will work with you in developing something that is as legally defensible as we can make.
But does that sound off the top of your head like something that we could do? Assuming that we had the resources to first map and say, if cell phone towers were located in these spots, which we consider to be the least obtrusive spots, they would provide adequate coverage, and then, therefore, we can limit the placement of them to these spots.
It could be possible. Whether or not it would absolutely prevent a cell phone company from applying for and obtaining a permit to locate in a different spot if they could demonstrate the engineering need for it is not absolute.
Not absolute, but if we'd done the work previously, I mean, basically, it's no different than our land use law.
Well, part of the complexity of it is that each of the cell phone companies uses slightly different technology. They have slightly different demands based upon the users and the traffic experience that they're having. And so to reach an absolute determination prior to receiving any applications is not something that I think we're going to be able to arrive at. But we can do the best we can, given what we can forecast in terms of need, and go forward. If that's something that you're interested in doing, we can work with you on putting together a proposal.
Well, there's also an irony here, Mary Beth, because last year one of the FCC commissioners was in town, and we had a chance to visit with him. I believe he was a Democrat on the panel. I'm not sure, but I believe he was considered at least nominally responsive to our issues. And what prompted this rule was the fact that there are some states and localities where they've used their land use process to delay by many years a decision on an application. And the irony here is that the city has never been faulted for the timeliness with which it reviews and acts on these things. In fact, the city is nationally a model of prompt review. Whether any carrier likes the outcome of our review or not, notwithstanding, we've not been an abuser. But this one-size-fits-all shot clock, which apparently was designed to curb some quote-unquote abuses in other places, now handcuffs us, and we weren't the problem. Is that a fair statement?
Yes.
And if I may display my advocacy for just a second, perhaps doubly ironically, although there were claims of those types of delays by the industry, local governments ask the industry to specifically identify where those problems had cropped up so that we could evaluate the situation and how it may have arisen or what the specific problems were. And those requests were not answered. And so the suspicions on the local government side are that we're not getting the full story as to what exactly may have happened in those unidentified situations.
Am I correct that any rulemaking by the FCC, once it's final, is subject to congressional oversight and the Congress has the authority to overturn a particular rule?
That's correct.
So we have two bites of the apple here, presumably. One is with rulemaking and the second is with our congressional delegation.
That's correct. And just to give you an idea of the posture, the city, along with other local governments, has asked the FCC to reconsider. That reconsideration request has been taken under advisement by the agency. In the meantime, the city of Arlington, Texas, has filed a challenge to the FCC's order in the Fifth Circuit, and that's the legal challenge that the city attorney's office would be moving to intervene in on behalf of the city of Portland, to join with the city of Arlington and other local governments in a challenge to the FCC's ruling in the Fifth Circuit.
So just to be clear, I mean, I've been a party and initiated some of these actions myself when I was in charge of the office, to be clear about what I'm saying. We continuously react in defensive posture to various FCC rulings and congressional rulings, as Commissioner Fish accurately pointed out, so much so that Mayor Katz recused herself from all hearings because she was upset with not being able to consider the health impacts of cell phone towers. What I'm suggesting is quite a different strategy. It's to do a 180-degree different kind of strategy than completely reacting defensively to this, but rather to be on the offense and to think of this in terms of possibly an opportunity. So cell phone companies, you ask for a quicker application process, okay, we can do that. And that we look at this as an opportunity probably even for revenue, so that we identify places throughout the city that are publicly owned properties, for instance, school properties or parks. I mean, if they're going to be placed somewhere, it would be nice for us to pre-decide where they're placed and own the properties and get revenue when they place them there and be able to say, here's how the cell phone tower works. Now, I recall when I had the Office of Cable and Franchise that there are a variety of different designs for cell phone towers. You can have the horrendously ugly cell phone towers that anybody can see from I-205 when you pass Southeast Burnside or East Burnside, Southeast Portland on the very east side of I-205. There's three of them there that stick out for miles around. Or you can have the other design that are so cleverly designed, one would never know they were a cell phone tower, that some of which mimic growth, trees, and a variety of designs. If we approach this in the way that I've come to believe that we should, which is to own the sites ourselves where possible, get revenue for it, say, here's the design that your cell phone tower is going to look, and you get an application, say, okay, you wanted it done quick. The answer is yes or no based on this mapping that we've done and these predetermined locations that we have.
So, Commissioner Leonard, I'd love to work with you on that with one caveat. On the issue of preemption of health issues, which precludes us from looking at health issues, has not prevented public health people globally to look at the health
right.
issues. And I watched a rather disturbing film on Sunday, a documentary on this question, and there is now a pretty significant body of evidence that the most vulnerable group that is impacted by cell phone use and cell phone towers actually is children.
Right.
So I've actually asked my Parks Bureau to undertake a review of all cell phone sightings, that is either attachments or towers, that are located adjacent to parks, recreation centers, or other places where children congregate, because I believe we have to actually make an independent judgment as to whether it's appropriate to have that technology concentrated in places where there are children. And the growing body of evidence is that children whose brains are not formed, who are in development, are actually at greater risk of adverse health impacts because of the cell phone technology. So to the extent there are places in industrial areas, commercial areas, and arterials that we can be proactive on, I think it's a great idea.
You're making my point.
But I think
you're
in
actually
terms of
making
schools,
my point.
Schools
the,
and
yeah.
parks, we're actually going to be looking at potentially unwinding some of those deals because we are actually concerned about the health impacts.
But the problem is the schools come in here with deals, and I've sat here, listened to an appeal involving a school within the city of Portland that wanted to place a cell phone tower because of the revenue.
Yeah.
So
cell phone towers and Coca-Cola machines
on their
property.
Well,
property,
so. I'm not talking about Coca-Cola machines. I'm talking about the placement of cell phone towers school advocated for. What I'm suggesting to you is we can do exactly what you're talking about by predetermining what the sites are. We are consistently, since I've been here, in a defensive position on the placement of cell phone towers. They come into us. They tell us where they want them. We react to that. They come up with a regulation. We don't like it. We react to that. What I'm suggesting is we change our strategy and more proactively say, if we don't want them at a school, okay, we've predetermined sites for cell phone towers. Here is a, for instance, behind the Firehouse Theater on Interstate. There's a abandoned water tank. If you drive by that park and that Firehouse Theater, it is surrounded, that tank, with cell phone repeaters. We get revenue from it. It's Portland Water Bureau. If you look throughout the city, there are cell phone towers on each of the Water Bureau sites. So what I'm suggesting to you is there is a collection of publicly owned properties that don't have to be schools, that don't have to be parks, that I think are strategically located enough throughout the city that if we wanted to undertake this project so that we kind of changed our strategy from what it's been for the last 8 years that I know of to a more proactive strategy, and we do the work up front, spend the money up front, make a determination specifically where these sites can be located at. And if they want to come in and ask for an application, it's yes or no based on whether or not it's on one of the pre-approved sites.
I think it's a great idea. We'll be spending a lot of time in court, but I think it's definitely something cable should look at because
we're in court anyway.
Because of the there's one dynamic here which we can't lose track of, which is the telecommunications industry gets whatever they want out of the FCC, and every time they preempt us, they buy a lawsuit. We buy a lawsuit when we test that. I think it's a good test. I think we should be proactive.
We should also
be budgeting for the lawsuits that follow and the other actions, because fundamentally, there's very little we can do until we actually get Congress to do some adequate oversight on a couple of these questions, and it includes the health issues.
I actually disagree with that. And the reason I disagree with that is we are spending money on lawsuits. We do spend a lot of money in this forum, but it's always on the defense. What I'm suggesting to you is we could spend that same money defending a very thoughtful, creative program that would address neighborhood concerns, that could even address health concerns, that could address a lot of concerns by coming up with a coverage system that we decide make sense for us, and then making sure they fit that criteria. And I'm not sure why that would be overturned. If we could demonstrate that those sites would provide the adequate coverage and we predetermined that they're most appropriate site in a particular area, I'm not sure how that would be overturned.
So I think this issue has been framed for further discussion, and let's come back to the resolution before council. Other questions or comments on the resolution? Carla, do we have anyone who's signed up to testify?
Veronica Bernier would like to testify.
Good morning,
Veronica. You have 3 minutes, and just state your name.
Good morning, council members. Good morning to you all. Veronica Bernier, Portland State Community Health Education and Public Health graduate, alumni 2005. good morning, Commissioner Leonards. It's always good to see you, Randy. You're looking well. Good job on the water.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's good. And good morning now, Commissioner Salzman, too. It's good to see you, too. You're doing a great job with the police department. We really appreciate that. All those women out there are grateful that you're working for the department.
Thank you.
So that's good. And also, Commissioner Nick Fish, good morning. I'm glad to see you're holding together the housing frontier because it was kind of chilly last night, very chilly. As it dips down into the 20s and below or around there, you can really feel the coolness. But we're talking about electrical fields and also city towers and things like that and federal communications work projects. I'm a veteran of San Francisco Public Health. I was there in the 70s and 80s working together with Dr. Mike Hess, H-E-S-S is how we spell his name. We did an open cohort retroactive study on the Sutro Towers in San Francisco and their effect of electromagnetic fields on children in nearby living situations. In about a quarter of a mile radius of that area, primarily most of the people were the children of doctors and medical residents and medical interns. Around the tower, I would suggest, if there is a tower to be built, that the residential community, the houses be slid off, you know, quite about at least a half a mile or more. The reason I say that is electromagnetic fields have an adverse effect on people with pacemakers, on very small children, and on pregnant women. We know this from studies in public health, and there is data to back it up. But the other thing I wanted to comment on is this. If a man at the blues festival can hit a G-string, and we're not talking about the other, the G-string on the guitar, okay, if the man can actually hit the G-string and affect traffic over there, you know, on that freeway over there nearest the blues festival, imagine what a cell phone tower would do. Also, that's got to be more electricity, more volume, more power, and all that stuff. So try to think about it quantitatively, you know, the net effect. That was sort of a joke, but the guitarist really did throw off traffic for 2 hours. But anyway, so I wanted to share that and also just be really careful. With communication, cell phones, and things like that, they think that actually bus drivers sometimes can be thrown off by cell phone. The field around a cell phone, my cell phone was, the range was, I think, about 20 miles. I had a former politician's cell phone, and whenever I turned it on, I swear people over there, you know, 50 miles away could hear what I was saying. So just be real careful with electromagnetic fields. Thank you very
Monica,
much.
Monica, thank you very much. Good. Carl, anyone else?
No one else.
Okay, this is a resolution. If you could call the roll, please.
Saltzman?
Good presentation, and I wish us luck in the city of Arlington, Texas, as well, in our intervention here. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fish?
I'd like to acknowledge the good work of Mary Beth Henry and of the commissioner in charge, who is not here today but is visiting her family in Europe, Amanda Fritz. There are a number of moving pieces here. One has to do with this shot clock, which I think we all recognize as an outrageous intrusion in local control. And since our existing shot clock was never identified as a problem by the FCC or any other regulatory body, this appears to be an example of burning the barn to roast the chicken. And we are being singled out and caught under the undertow, even though we haven't had a problem. The second issue has to do with the preemption of consideration of healthcare impacts. And there is a growing body of scientific literature which says this is a serious issue, and I'm pleased that the council last year under Amanda's leadership has asked Congress to investigate that issue. And the third has to do with how we can get the siting issues aligned with existing law. I think Commissioner Leonard has a good idea, and I think the constant tugging back and forth on this is causing havoc, and we're spending too much time in the neighborhoods, as Randy said, fighting a rearguard action on the placement. I suspect that the cell phone industry will always have the scientific edge as long as the playing field is so tilted in terms of making the arguments on coverage, but I think we should, as Randy said, find a way to move on the offensive on that. And I fully support that. Thank you for your excellent presentation. I vote aye. Carla, could you please read the title of Time Certain number 256?
Tentatively approve the proposal for a demolition review to demolish the historic Kiernan Building Dirty Duck Tavern, a contributing structure in the Chinatown National Register Historic District, in order to allow the construction of a new 3- to 4-story residential group living and soup kitchen building to serve the new Blanchet House of Hospitality at 421 to 439 Northwest 3rd Avenue, LU09-171-259-DM.
Now, this matter has been rescheduled to March 3rd, 2010 at 10:40 for a time certain. Carla, is anyone here who signed up to testify today?
I did not set up sign-out sheets.
Okay. So that matter will be rescheduled to March 3. Could you please read Council Agenda 259?
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with the State of Oregon Department of Environmental Quality for administration of the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System 1200Z, 1200COLS, and 1200A general permits for stormwater discharges from individual industrial activities.
Is someone here from BES on this?
I'll just present it.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you. This ordinance authorizes an intergovernmental agreement between the City of Portland and the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality to fund administration of industrial stormwater discharge permits within the city limits. Portland's industrial stormwater permit program began in 1994. in response to the city's federal stormwater permit, which requires the city to monitor and control pollutants in stormwater runoff from industrial facilities. The DEQ and the city have had this agreement since 1999 to share stormwater discharge permit revenue to support administration of these permits. The revenue generated for the city's permit program is about $132,000 a year. I believe this is a first reading. Yeah.
Questions from council? Carl, has anyone signed up to testify?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Okay, this matter proceeds to a second reading next week. If we could suspend the rules just for a moment and acknowledge the guests that are here today from the National Peace Foundation. Welcome. Who's your sponsor here at City Hall? And they are all from Russia?
Yes.
So are they able to understand anything that's going on up here?
Well, we have our wonderful interpreter here on the end who's quietly interpreting into their.
Well, we want to welcome our friends to the National Peace Foundation, and we're honored to have you with us today during our council session.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. Carla, could you please read council item number 260?
Authorize the Bureau of Environmental Services to acquire certain permanent easements necessary for construction of the Northeast 33rd Drive Culvert Replacement Project number E07154 through the exercise of the city's eminent domain authority.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. President. This ordinance authorizes the city to exercise its eminent domain authority to acquire easements for an important culvert replacement project in the Columbia Slough. This is a project the Federal Corps of Engineers is designing and constructing to replace the culvert under Northeast 33rd. It will improve fish passage and water quality, and it has great support from Congressman Blumenauer and Senator Wyden. The easements are not controversial, and the property owners have indicated that they are willing to sell the easements to the city. The Corps will spend about $3 million on this project and generate around 30 family wage jobs. So I think this is also a second reading.
Carla, has anyone signed up to testify?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Any council discussion at this point? This goes to a second reading. Thank you. Carla, could you please read council item number 261?
Amend ordinance authorizing the Bureau of Environmental Services to enter into agreements for the conveyance of properties located within the East Lentz Floodplain Restoration Project area.
This is a second reading. Will you please call the roll?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye. That matter passes. Next up is 262. Could you please read the item, Carl?
Amend fee schedule for site development permits.
This is a second reading. Vote only. Please call the roll.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye. Sorry.
Fish?
Aye. Matter passes. Are there any other matters the council would like to raise? Hearing none, we are adjourned.